Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Disruptive Business, celebrating those who change the game.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton. Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well, but I just looked at my cell phone a minute ago. My wife has discovered Basecamp, and so we have this whole Christmas project list on there.
Very nice.
And there's like 19 things I'm supposed to have done by 5 o'clock today.
How you doing on that?
But other than that, it's been a great day.
Well, you know, Disruptive Business features cutting-edge organizations and the innovative leaders who guide them. And today's show, as always, is brought to you by our friends at Minerva Planning Group. And today I am excited. Seems like we didn't realize this at the time, but both guests are kind of know each other. We have Ashish Mistry and we have Heath Heineman. And Heath is with Hypopotamus and Ashish is with BLH Venture Partners. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Now, how do you guys know each other?
That's a loaded question.
Loaded question? Well, Heath, why don't you tell us? Because it seems like Ashish means more to you.
All right. So 8 years ago, we started an e-commerce company.
Right.
We were looking, we went deep into the technical expertise element, and networking started to become a limiting factor. We weren't having much return. Joined the Atlanta CEO Council, and Ashish happened to have been the president.
Oh, okay.
So, whenever we walked in, shook hands, and from that point, we had a lot of overlap. So for the last 5 years, he has been my wingman. Obviously, I have not been his long wingman.
you've been more in that sense.
Well, Ashish, David Hartnett suggested you come on the show. He recommended you for the interview here, so you must have some connections with him as well.
Yeah, I owe him money.
Is that what it is?
Don't we all?
Yep. No, but David's a great guy, and you know, much like the way Heath and I met, the Atlanta CEO Council was how I met David, and so, you know, from there, we have a partnership with the Metro Atlanta Chamber and TAG to basically launch Venture Atlanta. And so that's how David and I know each other from that board and from that group.
So it seems like networking is it's something that everybody has to do, but some people, it seems, Heath, that do it better than others. For you to kind of hang out with Ashish like this, you must have been doing something right.
Yes.
That's good. So Ashish, what are you guys up to at BLH Venture Partners?
Yep. So and for those of you who aren't familiar with it, we're a going on 4-year-old early stage venture firm. We're private money. We don't have any outside institutional capital. And, today we've got 14 portfolio companies that range from, two guys in a PowerPoint deck to some companies that are in the tens of millions of dollars in revenue. The areas where we specialize are tech-enabled business services, so recurring revenue, SaaS software businesses, enterprise software, and specifically information security. And much in part, how Heath and I have connected is e-commerce is another one of those verticals that we specialize in. And so a lot of our investments and a lot of the things that we see and look for are tethered to those areas. And most of that really kind of comes back to what our backgrounds are. And so my background is as an operator. And so I actually, spend my morning running a company and then switch into VC guy around lunchtime. And so the company I run happens to be an e-commerce business that Heath and his partners really helped me to kind of become familiar with. And as a result of experiencing that e-commerce business, we've made several other investments in e-commerce companies. And, Heath's helped me to vet them, and that's how we've built our relationship.
So when you were building your company, are you following all the guidelines you would have the companies you invest
totally,
in?
Totally not.
By the book?
Just do what I say, not do what I do. And so, and I'm, I'm somewhat of a hypocrite in that sense right now, so I'm living that dual life.
So you hold your portfolio clients to a higher standard than you might hold yourself?
For the last 3 years, yeah. And so, but what I would tell you is that, we use our portfolio company. It's called Control Freak. It's a video game accessories company. We use it as a testing ground for a lot of the investments we make. So, you know, I'll spin it a little bit and tell you that by operating a business in the morning, we're much better at investing and making decisions on where we should be placing bets. And so so that way I can justify my lack of focus on just being an investor.
Now, when you are running your business and the venture firm, are you investing in Atlanta-based only, or are you invest in anybody?
No, so we look we don't have any geographic predisposition. We do want to focus our investments on Atlanta, and we've done that to the degree of you know, having the majority of portfolio companies here. But we've got investments in companies in New York. So we've got a company in New York called Better Cloud, which is managing and securing the Google Enterprise, the Google Apps marketplace. We've got companies in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Like, you know, we've got a company up there called Country Outfitter that sells, you know, Western wear to, you know, people in Michigan and New York. And so it's a great e-commerce company that actually Heath helped me to diligence.
Heath is trying to envision you in chaps right now.
That's probably
I've already not been, a visual. Been there, done that.
Yeah, that's inappropriate. And then we've got companies, switching gears back, we've got companies in California. So we've got investments that, you know, in a company called SaveUp, which is, you know, if you can imagine kind of Mint.com meets American Express Rewards for paying down your credit card or loan debt. You know, so we've got interesting companies across the board.
So now in Atlanta, it seems like we're always struggling with attracting dollars here into the city. Do you have any tips or wish list items that would help? At least I know we were at Venture Atlanta and there was a talk like to it. Why can't we get some of these outside venture firms to have an office here?
So, you know, I think to answer that question, you need to look at what those venture firms do, right? So there's a couple of big things that are happening or have happened in this space, right? A, there's less money in the marketplace. So, you know, just like with any of you guys building your own businesses, right, you can only stretch as far as you can without kind of caving in them in the middle. So that's one thing. Also, you know, you've got these venture firms aren't huge. There's not, you know, 100 people running around. And so, you know, they've got to be cognizant of the time and energy they spend on the companies. And so, you know, they'll fly. They'll get on a plane and go anywhere to do an investment. And most of the top-tier venture firms in the country have investments here in Georgia and Atlanta specifically. Mm-hmm. But you know, just from putting an office here, we've got to have the density of startups that are venture backable. And it's not to say that we don't. It's just to say that we're early in the game. You know, we've been, you know, the Silicon Valley and that area has been doing what they've been doing for, you know, probably 60 years now.
So how do the good ones get on your radar? Are you Gordon Gekko and you look at 100 deals a day? Are you that guy, or is there some particular process that they follow just to even get in your arena?
Yeah, it's the network. I'll tell you that, you know, the process is, you know, We're here and we're visible in the community. We're very approachable, as are most of my other colleagues that are in the investments business.
Right.
You know, we're pretty easy to get a hold of. We answer our emails and we know people, and so odds are good that we're probably 2 degrees separated. So if you talk to somebody that you work with or you're trying to get in touch with any of us, and you've got something that has merit, right? You know, what we're not interested in getting in front of is people that are, you know, hey, listen, as soon as I get this money, then I'll go and work on something. I've got this great idea, right?
So do you have a couple of those go-to quick screening questions that let you know if you're just going to say, hi, nice to meet you, and move on, or if you might really have a substantive conversation with someone?
Yeah, I mean, if you know, I frame it in this way, right? You know, if there's a really smart technical person that's actually built something, they're doing something with the skills they have. They've taken the time and energy and invested their own time and energy, whether it's nights and weekends or even their own money into building something. You've done that, and you show up in my office and say, "Let me show you this thing because I've built it." We have a network, you know, guys like Heath and alike that we can basically say, "Hey, can we do something with this?" and apply the capital towards it to help build the team out.
Right.
Right. So that's one scenario of a technical person that's built something that we'll open our doors to. The second side of it is if you've got a team that shows up, says, hey, we're all ready to go. We've actually got, you know, we've got a CEO, we got someone to run, you know, product, we've got someone to start marketing. And we've been testing and we're building some of these metrics, right? And this is what we've seen. We've all been working nights and weekends for like 9 months, but we've got something here, and this is the testing we've done and the results. That's another scenario. If you're a seasoned entrepreneur and you've done it before a couple of times, and you know, we typically see that as well. And so in that scenario, what we don't want to do is just, you know, we don't want to have a business person with a PowerPoint deck show up and say, hey, this is my idea. If you'll fund me, then I'll quit my high paying job.
Right, and work on this full time.
And I'll take a 10% salary cut from what I'm making now.
Right.
And risk that for
this venture that I believe in with all my heart.
Yeah, and that's really it, right? I mean, you're looking for someone that's going to put it on the line,
right?
And we've had success in finding people that are willing to do that, and that's, you know, you asked the question about, you know, the venture firms coming here and the entrepreneurs raising money, you know. An entrepreneur that really has something will figure out a way to get it funded, whether it's, you know. Venture capital, you know, in its formality has it comes in very different flavors, you know, credit cards, you
right.
know, friends
That's
and family, you know, all those to me are venture. I mean, it's not in its truest sense, but, you know, what did they call venture before the industry existed? They called it all those things, right?
Right.
So
now how do you see this crowdfunding thing impacting the venture angel world?
So I don't think it hasn't impacted my world all that much, but you know, I think what it's done is it's shown that there's, you know, the democratization of funding is there, right? I think it's a little bit scary in the sense that you'll definitely have, in, you know, probably some short order, you know, some Bernie Madoff type of investments where you've got,
right,
you know, people, you know, a thousand, you know, you've got Ponzi schemes that are going
to
be built.
Well, you see that on Kickstarter now. There's been kind of some project that never got funded, but people, I mean, they got funded, but the project never kind of happened.
Yeah, and checks didn't get returned, right?
Right. That's
so you know, that's going to happen, and that will cause the pendulum to swing the other way. It's great, you know, for, you know, if you think of there's places like Quirky or even like Kickstarter where you can fund some of these projects that will get off the ground that would not have. The challenge is really not getting the initial money. It's doing something with that,
right,
spending it right and making sure that you've got a business after you get to point A.
Isn't that one of the values of the venture capital system, is that I'm not just getting your money, I'm getting your brain power and your Rolodex to help me move the ball forward.
Totally.
And to know even how much money to ask for, like, I mean, I'd love to have more money. There's a lot of cool things I think we could do to grow what we're doing. I don't even know how much to ask for. And I'm sure that's one of their first questions. How much do you want? What are you going to do with it? We need to be prepared with those answers, or at least be willing to get some counsel.
Yeah,
ideas, right?
Yeah, I mean, those are basic things, right? And I don't, you know, sometimes we're just really busy running our company, so it doesn't faze you, right? You just show up and you just.
Well, I got stuff to do. There's no never ending to do list.
Right, and so, but when you're in that place of, all right, hey, you know, I'm going to go raise money. You need to really understand in its entirety what that means, right? Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't, you know, you've got other people that actually have a say-so in what you do.
Right.
You've got the ability to have, you know, buy teachers and hire partners, right? And that's what your equity, you know, that's what selling equity in your business allows you and affords you the opportunity to do.
And you better do that, because why bother doing it that way? Because I can, you know, get another credit card and I can get money other ways.
Yeah, but you look at, you know, even what Heath and his partners have done with their business, right? They haven't raised a penny of outside money,
mm-hmm,
right? But they've been building it the old-fashioned way, which is by, you know, hey, I sold something today for X.
Right,
my
margin, use that money.
Use that money.
Okay, I got to bring him in, though, but why? Is it because everything just kind of worked out, or did you try and it didn't work, and you said, okay, that's not going to work, so we better go sell something?
I lost all of my family money in the startup before this one, so I had no money to ask for, right? So that's that.
You only get one shot at family.
Right, that's it. No,
one
I mean,
shot.
We use it all.
Right.
And so we were actually fleeing technology and we were fleeing entrepreneurship. We were going as far away as possible.
Right.
We ended up in a franchise plumbing wholesale environment. Right.
Right.
So as far away from a computer as possible.
Right.
We heard about one guy that was selling $60,000 worth of product that was sitting on the shelf, that was already sitting on the plumber wholesaler shelf, our third friend from high school.
Mm-hmm.
We said, hey, Kevin, you build a website. I know that I'll market it.
Right.
Marcus gave us $2,000 to seed the AdWords account. We turned on AdWords at noon, had to turn it off at 2 because too many people were buying.
Wow. So you sold them all.
Right.
And you're like, wow.
This
seems doable.
Right.
Let's do this again.
But from that point, we stopped being a search marketer and a web developer, and we had to figure out how to get a toilet in a box and ship it across America. Right.
And so then a whole new set of problems.
New set of problems. And you have to innovate, like Ashish just alluded to. You're not going to stay in your box and assume that somebody else is going to find out the answers. I mean, we had to go figure it out, and we ended up breaking about $30,000 worth of toilets before we got the first one to land. But because of the positive nature of e-commerce cash flows, where I get money in my bank tomorrow,
right,
and I don't have to pay the vendor for 30 or 45 days, the more that we could sell, right, the more that we could break. And eventually, whenever that first one landed and it didn't break, we were golden, right? And so e-commerce from that point has always been a positive nature. We built a B2B part of our business, which actually we couldn't have. We took e-commerce and backwards integrated into a more traditional master distributor business that we could have never funded at the beginning.
Did you at any time try to get venture capital or anything like that?
And I talked to Ashish, right?
Ashish laughed at him.
Right. No.
Did you show him a napkin? Like, what'd you show him?
No. I mean, it's like, hey, if you'll be truthful, see, because he wasn't trying to poach off of our opportunity. He was being truthful. He's able to help us navigate the system, and it's his system. So he knows the entire landscape and going, all right, people are going to see this. They're not going to want to see this. If y'all can get over this hurdle without taking it, you'll be in a better situation. I mean, so it's having that person that has the visibility. I spend my entire day reading Google AdWords help manuals, right? Or following Rand Fishkin and SEO Moz. It's you have to have a core group of guys that you can really trust that are looking at all elements that are required to build and scale a business, and we just didn't have that much time, and so you have to find somebody external from yourself, like Ashish, to be able to lean on.
It's that everybody does what they do, so you're focused on what you do. Ashish is focused what he does, and then that can kind of.
But Ashish didn't just pounce on him either. You had this trust, and you obviously are the type of guy that's just not going to pounce on it just for the equity. You counseled these folks that said, hey, don't do this yet if you can accomplish these things. Am I hearing that story right?
Right. Now, granted, I mean, our entire business was built off of Jim Collins and Good to Great and Built to Last and In Search of Excellence and Drucker. And, I mean, we weren't fools. We were very cautious with our dollar. We've been profitable from day one. And so we were never in a financial pinch. We never put ourselves in that position.
Right.
And to us, right, if you find, you know, when people show up and, you know, you asked that question earlier, right, you know, you show up, what do you want to see? Well, being in a financial pinch is a really tough, you know.
You don't want to see that.
You don't want to see that because all of a sudden you're putting money in right before the cliff.
Right.
And to a degree, you want people that know that they should have seen that 6 months ago, and they should have seen you 6 months when they had 6 months of cash.
Right.
Not 30 days. And, you know, and so the challenge ends up being that sometimes those companies just die.
And that's just the reality of it.
The nature of the beast.
Right.
But new ones are born, so.
I'll tell you another compliment of being cash-strapped is that, so whenever you're going, whenever you were alluding to just a moment ago about, hey, what would I do with my money?
Right.
I can tell you exactly what I would do with my money because we have a constant queue. We work in an agile product development environment, so Agile Scrum XP. And so we take all of the possible things that we could use to enhance our business, everything from logistics to, CRM enhancements to customer-facing enhancements, and they're all written on note cards. And now it's digitized. But essentially, we try to capture everything that we could possibly do within our business. And we hold them, and then the three main partners go through that entire list on a weekly basis or on a biweekly basis and take those elements and push them to the top. All right, we have this many resources. We're going to get through this many things. But we always know. I mean, I could tell you what we would do for the next 6 months within our organization unless a new idea shows up today.
What a great discipline. Right. That's fantastic. Because I bet you a lot of folks dismiss ideas, don't even let them germinate and give them any real consideration because just immediately say, oh, well, we don't have any money right now. Just shut that down. Outstanding.
For us, that's inconceivable.
Inconceivable. Right? Even, I'm sure, in a lot of businesses, that's
But am I right,
Ashish?
A lot of people would be thinking like I described, right? They wouldn't pursue the idea because they would just say, oh, we're strapped, you know, shut up, go back to work.
Yeah, and that's the difference between, you know, businesses that will be small in lifestyle and businesses that are going to scale and that are investment grade.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's the operators. It's a sense of maturity around the people that in the operators around the table, right? They're thinking about how to build and grow versus, you know, I got to get this widget out the door today.
Right. That's how we talk about it. There are some people that are just focused on making money and other people are focused on building a machine that makes money.
Yeah. And that's it. So, I mean, you know, if you've ever read, why am I blanking on the book now? It's Paul Gerber's book.
Oh, the E-Myth. Right.
Right. E-Myth. It's, you know, that's the tenant. So.
Now, Heath, you have your core business, but you also have this other thing on the side. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So Kevin and I were actually given the opportunity to leave our organization in the hand of our third partner. In one way, we were actually chaotic within our – so e-commerce is a beautiful prism to look at the landscape because in the same way that Ashish was alluding to, he uses it to vet – deals for us, we use it to vet news and seed new startups. So if we see an opportunity to make analytics enhancements or pricing algorithm enhancements, we look and go, all right, is this core just to our business or is it applicable to all other e-tailers? And if it were applicable, if it could potentially move the needle of all other e-tailers, then we have to figure out almost how to externalize this feature, right, and take it out of our
sure.
business. And it's in, like Ashish said, it's in working your business for the first half of the day that it actually creates opportunity for the second half. And so we were, and because it's not the core competency of your business to create an analytics platform and keep it within a company like mine, which is called National Builder Supply, those two cores are so off or confusing to a potential partner or acquirer that it's almost better to externalize that factor and let it stand on its own two feet. Well, e-commerce had identified so many of those properties. We have so many ideas in the back of in a manila envelope folder, although it's called OneNote, right? It's or Evernote, right?
It's a virtual.
Nice
right.
imagery,
right.
though. Right. Nicely done.
That you just see so much opportunity that all you need is a talent pool to act on these ideas. And your best proving ground is back with your own product. And if you're a large e-tailer, that's a hell of a value proposition if you
right.
can move your own needle forward, right?
Oh, yeah.
And because that gives just cause for that other e-tailer to think that it would move their needle forward too. So we were seeing all of this. We look at the landscape of – we read TechCrunch, VentureBeat, BetaBeat. We see a lot of ideas that we've built out as elements within our business falling through as startups and Y Combinator, Techstars, 500 startups. So Kevin and I were almost pulled out of our own organization because of the opportunity that we saw within our organization. So we were going to go build a couple of other companies, and we were also mentors with Ashish and Flashpoint, which is Georgia Tech's accelerator, incubator. Met a couple of the other technology mentors within Atlanta and really started looking at a couple of trends, and they were macro and systemic and limiting factors even to the next startup that we were going to create. So we took essentially a year off to help bundle all of the consumer web digital oriented startups within Atlanta to aggregate all of our needs to help change some macro level limiting factors in Atlanta. And so it's called Hypopotamus. We just paid rent for a year said, anybody who's walking in this direction will go much further and faster if we walk together.
And so it's a physical location?
Mm-hmm. It is in the bottom of the Biltmore.
At the bottom of the Biltmore, which is near Georgia Tech. Is there any tie-in with Georgia Tech?
We know a lot of people at Tech.
You know, but it's not a formal.
But no, there's not a formal association with Georgia Tech, which is also an enhancement because Georgia Tech, even being within the system, you can any time that funding or organizational funding is involved, you can become very myopic.
Yeah.
And the system doesn't allow you to engage other universities. Two of the best advertising portfolio schools in the world are here in Atlanta called Creative Circuits and Portfolio Center. We have SCAD just right up the street. Kennesaw State has a very complimentary set of accessories in Georgia State. Then University of Georgia has Grady School of Journalism, which we love.
So now you're able to play nicely with everybody.
Right.
And so who are the – you have companies that come and go with at the location? How does that work?
So we
– It sounds very kind of fluid.
We help give them as much as we can give them, right? There is a gravity associated with what we're doing. A lot of people hear about it socially. They wander in. They know that they want to be in an environment around other people that are talking the same language.
Oh, right.
Because the guy right next to you actually knows more about analytics than you do, or they know more about domaining than you do, or they know more about,
.net,
right, mm-hmm. the Twitter API or whatever else. So it's kind of just trying to accelerate this peer-to-peer education that's not taught on campus.
In a very practical, real-world way.
Right.
And I the way I see it, right, so my office is actually, in the ATDC, in the ATDC building.
Right.
So, we've got several of our portfolio companies there. But if I give, to the listener out there, right, so if they're trying to kind of visualize it, if you look at where the Georgia Tech campus is on 5th Street, you basically have the Starbucks and the Barnes & Nobles that's right there. And then you've got the Biltmore, which is at the end of 5th Street. If you think about it as a brain, you basically got your left brain, which is the Georgia Tech engineers.
Right.
You've got the septum, which is that ATDC space in between. And then you've got the arcade level of the Biltmore where Hippopotamus is located as the right brain and the creative. And what's happening is it's all kind of – it's there's a lot of elements flowing through that, really through that corridor that end up coming together in that space to, as Heath calls it, create serendipity. But I call them, to a degree, collisions of right brain creatives with left brain kind of – with, left brain kind of – call them left brain creatives if that's an appropriate term. But coders are fairly creative. But, when you pull them together, you end up, hopefully forming teams. And out of those teams, you start to solve problems and you start to work on things that hopefully become investable opportunities for guys like myself. Right, and for operators like Heath and Kevin and Marcus, opportunities to A, take some of their ideas, throw them out there to these folks that are showing up, and they're working on real live problems. And so, I was there last night, and there's 70 people there. 70 people there at 10 o'clock at night.
Man.
And so, there was a program we had last night, but it's what's happening is a groundswell of need and interest, and so it's coming together.
So it seems like, you've used the word gravity a couple times. Are you sensing that you're hitting that tipping point where it's kind of growing in the way that you envisioned?
We're at a good first step, right?
So are we at the beginning of the end of the first step or the beginning of the beginning of the first
step? We're at the beginning of the beginning of the first step, right? So for 6 months, it was just a customer discovery period. Mm-hmm. We opened the doors, and we really didn't want anyone to have any expectations on so Kevin and I were getting out of the experience what we needed just by being able to talk to the people that walked in.
Right.
But if the space was empty, we almost felt the obligation to create an excuse why it was empty. That makes any sense.
Uh-huh.
But we were getting what we needed, which was the information out of the people that were walking in, and we were able to talk to students, go, hey, students, hey, Mr. Computer Science major over at Georgia Tech that's being recruited by Twitter and Facebook, do you know about Ashish Mistry? And they'd go, no. Have you ever heard of David Cummings or Paul Judge or Michael Tavani at Scout Mob or you know, Reggie Bradford, or do you know any of these guys? And they're like, no, right? And so we were getting the information that we were able to identify that were the limiting factors within our own ecosystem. And so it really wasn't about who was filling the space. It was about us gathering the information to then create a plan of action, because luckily enough, our real business, H.M. Wallace and National Builders Supply, had given us a long enough rope that we didn't have to start producing results the first day that we went in, and we were really granted the ability to go in and take a 30,000-foot view at the system, and then to create a plan of action. One of the individuals that happened just to serendipitously walk in is a guy named Scott Henderson, and he had just come down from Mass Challenge in Boston. He was one of the guys that helped Startup America, and he's on the board of advisors at South by Southwest, and he just really connected with what we're doing. And so now he's an executive director of Hippopotamus as well. And then it falls over into the lifestyle. I'll give one caveat. So I have three children, right? And to say that I work to enhance their life, I'm not going to pull away from my engagement with them after 5 or 5:30 or 6. I still coach their soccer games. So one of the limiting factors in the system, so Ashish says that he was there last night. That doesn't happen if there aren't people, good stewards of the space that are able to host it, because I was still committing to being my son's soccer coach. But after the system, after people start to believe in what you're doing, they start contributing. There are other people within the system that are able to be there from 5 to 10, and that's where the handcuffs really start to fall off, and we're able to start providing the needs within the system. Like I said, there's a venture capitalist in Atlanta that also participates in Tel Aviv, and he's like, look, the difference in Tel Aviv and Atlanta is that all the startup guys are celebrities and everybody knows everybody's story in Tel Aviv. If you think about it, all the startup guys are celebrities means that if Ashish, that people are clamoring to sit next to Ashish if he were in Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. But if we're in Atlanta and there's talent, you know, at Emory, sorry, Ashish, I didn't mean to leave out at Emory when I was talking about Create a Circus and right, Kennesaw State. So Emory is obviously in Atlanta, an asset to Atlanta. But I digress. I digress so far that I forgot where I was.
Tel Aviv startup.
Well, to make him a rock star and exactly. To elevate the entrepreneur into right. This kind of rock star right. Status where the people at Georgia Tech are clamoring to meet the issues
correct.
Of the city.
Because in the publications, to say that there's to use a football analogy, that there are five-star recruits on campus, Georgia Tech has its five-star academic recruits, and they're sitting there, and they're identifiable. But they're five-star recruits because they started programming in third or fourth grade, right? And so they've been reading TechCrunch and VentureBeat and BetaBeat and Pando mm-hmm. Daily and all things D for forever, and they're participating on Hacker News and Reddit, but all of the information that's flowing through the system is giving them deeper insights and communications with companies in New York and in San Francisco.
Right.
And so they've already seen the inside of what Twilio's organization is, because it's listed in the Fast Company Design blog, and they just saw it yesterday. But Ashish has Control Freak sitting up at the ATDC, and they don't even know that Ashish exists. And so we're never going to date them if they don't know that we exist. And so we really have to use our position within the startup community to start to engage them while they're committed to Atlanta for at least 4 years.
And increase the profile of the players in Atlanta.
Absolutely. I mean, it's mutually beneficial, because in increasing the profile to our own audience, we start to increase our profile nationally as well.
Now, Ashish, are you comfortable with that? Do you want to be a rock star?
I want my portfolio companies to be rock stars and my CEOs to be rock stars.
Are you buying that thesis of elevating the entrepreneur?
Totally. I'm bought in, right, Heath?
Right.
I think, you know, Heath's analogy. I mean, if you look at, you know, we're a football, you know, we're right. a football part of the country, right? I mean,
sure.
How many, you know, it's pretty bad form when Florida and Georgia lose their recruits to Notre Dame or to West mm-hmm. Coast teams.
Right.
It doesn't really happen. And you know, we can do that. We can do such a good job with our football programs.
Yeah, we do a good job elevating the SEC. You know, why can't we the tech stars
the same thing holds true, right? Heath says it all the time, right? I mean, that programmer that's a rock star when he goes to Twitter was probably a rock star when he was in high school.
Right, exactly.
Or when he was in college. But he just didn't know that the teams that he could go and play for were in his backyard, because he would have probably stayed at home.
Right.
If we can build the right relationships, and then that's the guy that's going to start the next great tech startup. Mm-hmm. And then that creates the gravity element, right? And so it's kind of like you just have to create your own utopia over there. I mean, you have to believe in that guy enough and then support him, help him get inundated with the best practical practices. Let him know, hey, you don't have to know the entire venture capital landscape. Ashish knows the entire venture capital landscape. You start to plug them in, and it's kind of hyper-networking, essentially. You have to take them so the tech blog, the tech publication Pando Daily is called Pando Daily off of the Pando tree. And so it's the Pando tree or the banyan tree. So one tree sprouts, the root system grows out 5 feet, and it starts another tree. And they said that that's the analogy for Silicon Valley, because the best way to start your own business is to be the fourth or the fifth guy in a prior startup, and you learn all the best practices, and you know who, you know what your development process is, and you know who your chief designer is, and you turn around, and just like if somebody were the fourth or fifth individual within National Builder Supply and they were sitting right beside me, then they would already be networked into Ashish. So they already know where to go with their financing. They know who to go to for their copywriters and creative directors and art directors, and they already know about paper prototyping, and they know about, you know, all of responsive design practices and everything else.
It should be easier for that person.
Absolutely.
And here we're always recreating the wheel because a lot of the talent is leaving.
Right. And then let me jump back in, and I don't throw a stone at, you know, Atlanta's Fortune 500, but it's very difficult to learn those full system best practices whenever you join an organization that's so large that you just participate within one silo, right? Those organizations grow so large to where you're just given one specific task. And if you're given one specific task, so I was a biology chemistry undergraduate, and it goes back into the concept of a stem cell, right? You're not differentiated. But if you get differentiated into just hair or fingernails, then you don't see you don't know what's going on in the rest of the system. But if you join something, if the four guys sitting around this table right now were to start a business, somebody has to come up with figuring out how to get this limiting factor taken, you know, removed, and we look around and look at each other in the eyes, and somebody has to go do it. But whenever you end up in an organization with 4,000 or 40,000 employees, that you're never met with that.
Somebody else can always do it.
That's right. Well, good stuff. People wanted to learn more, Ashish. If somebody's got something they want to share, you have a website?
Yeah, you can get blhventures.com. So that's there.
That's where they send their napkins with ideas?
They're just, they can email me. Ashish, BLH Ventures is fine. I'm there. I'm actually not on Twitter. So I am there, but I'm not as responsive because it's more work.
And you're open. You want to have conversations.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, we're in the business of having conversations and learning and trying to kind of grow the community.
And so. let me join that. Also within a platform like Hypopotamus, what we're wanting to do is to take Ashish's expertise and scale it so that it's not a one-to-one conversation, it's a one-to-many conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Right? And so then you're able to go back within the archives to hear about whenever somebody a year ago asked Ashish that question. So you're an 18-year-old is able to quickly close that gap without having to track down Ashish and ask all of these questions.
Right.
Now, that's great.
Your website?
Hypopotamus, HYPEPOTAMUS .com. So we're at Hypopotamus on Twitter. And then my day job is NationalBuilderSupply.com.
So if I need a toilet, that's
if you need a toilet, right? I tell you what, you're memorable in the tech scene when you say that you sell toilets.
Right? Stand out.
Right, you stand out.
Now, are you guys going to that Christmas event at City Hall?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Next Tuesday, we'll have a photo booth. We'll have a photo booth. Cool. I expect to see you in it.
Now, Ashish, you going or you don't?
I bought the film.
All right. Awesome. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Thanks again to our sponsor, Minerva Planning Group, the good folks who provide their clients with financial peace of mind. Check them out online at MinervaPlanningGroup.com. We will see you all next week on Disruptive Business.